from the fucking bottom. Lovecraft penis.
Greetings, Cast Macabre listeners. I'm Paul Newman, and I'm standing in for Barry this week because, sadly, the forces of darkness have overcome him and stolen his voice. As I'm sure you're aware, Barry has to fight off a continual stream of Vestal Virgins from his door, so I'm sure he'll be allowing one or two of them to sacrifice themselves for the good of his health, and he'll be back fighting fit in no time. This week, we're teaming up with an event at Reading Libraries to bring you another classic episode. Barry's given me this to read out. It has always been inevitable that we'd... No, I'm not going to do him. It's always been inevitable that we'd one day read an H.P. Lovecraft tale. And when Miriam from Reading Libraries contacted us to tell us about the event, it was clear that day had arrived. The event's called Weird Winter Tales, and it's a seasonal celebration of the works of cult author H.P. Lovecraft, with readings and talks from authors and experts reflecting upon his influence on popular culture. There'll also be a screening of Call of Cthulhu, the film adaptation of one of Lovecraft's most famous short stories. The event's being held on Saturday the 4th of December from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Reading Central Library, which is in Berkshire, England, UK. We hope to be able to report on the event sometime in December, and perhaps even play a recording from it if we're lucky, who knows. Tickets are £3 or £2 if you've got a Reading Library card. This week, we've two stories for you, the first of which is Ex Oblivione by H.P. Lovecraft. When the last days were upon me, and the ugly trifles of existence began to drive me to madness like the small drops of water the torturers let fall ceaselessly upon one spot of their victim's body, I loved the irradiate refuge of sleep. In my dreams, I found a little of the beauty I had vainly sought in life, and wandered through old gardens and enchanted woods. Once, when the wind was soft and scented, I heard the south calling, and sailed endlessly and languorously under strange stars. Once, when the gentle rain fell, I glided in a barge down a sunless stream under the earth, till I reached another world of purple, twilit, iridescent arbors and undying roses. And once, I walked through a golden valley that led to shadowy groves and ruins, and ended in a mighty wall, green with antique vines, and pierced by a little gate of bronze. Many times I walked through that valley, and longer would I pause in the spectral half-light, where the giant trees squirmed and twisted grotesquely, and the grey ground stretched damply from trunk to trunk, sometimes disclosing the mould-stained stones of buried temples. And always the goal of my fancies was the mighty vine-grown wall with the little gate of bronze therein. After a while, as the days of waking became less and less bearable from their greyness and sameness, I would often drift in opiate peace through the valley and the shadowy groves, and wonder how I might seize them for my eternal dwelling place, so that I need no more crawl back to a dull world stripped of interest and new colours. And as I looked upon the little gate in the mighty wall, I felt that beyond it lay a dream country, from which, once it was entered, there would be no return. So each night in sleep, I strove to find the hidden latch of the gate in the ivied antique wall, though it was exceedingly well hidden. I would tell myself that the realm beyond the wall was not more lasting merely, but more lovely and radiant as well. Then one night in the dream city of Zakarion, I found a yellowed papyrus filled with the thoughts of dream sages who dwelt of old in that city, and who were too wise ever to be born in the waking world. Therein were written many things concerning the world of dream, and among them was lore of a golden valley and a sacred grove, with temples and a high wall pierced by a little bronze gate. When I saw this lore, I knew that it touched on the scenes I had haunted, and I therefore read long in the yellowed papyrus. Some of the dream sages wrote gorgeously of wonders beyond the irrepassable gate, but others told of horror and disappointment. I knew not which to believe, yet longed more and more to cross forever into the unknown land, for doubt and secrecy are the lure of lures, and no new horror can be more terrible than the daily torture of the commonplace. So when I learned of the drug which would unlock the gate and drive me through, I resolved to take it when next I awaked. Last night, I swallowed the drug and floated dreamily into the golden valley and the shadowy groves. And when I came this time to the antique wall, I saw that the small gate of bronze was ajar. From beyond came a glow that weirdly lit the giant twisted trees and the tops of the buried temples. And I drifted on, songfully, expectant of the glories of the land from whence I should never return. But as the gate swung wider, and the sorcery of drug and dream pushed me through, I knew that all sights and glories were at an end. For in that new realm was neither land nor sea, but only the white void of unpeopled, illimitable space. So, happier than I had ever dared hope to be, I dissolved again into that native infinity of crystal oblivion from which the daemon life had called me for one brief and desolate hour. I'm sure all dreamers can relate to that in some way. And now for our second story this week, Nyarlathotep by H.P. Lovecraft. Nyarlathotep, the crawling chaos. I am the last. I will tell the Audient Void. I do not recall distinctly when it began, but it was months ago. The general tension was horrible. To a season of political and social upheaval was added a strange and brooding apprehension of hideous physical danger. A danger widespread and all-embracing, such a danger as may be imagined only in the most terrible phantasms of the night. I recall that the people went about with pale and worried faces and whispered warnings and prophecies which no one dared consciously repeat or acknowledge to himself that he had heard. A sense of monstrous guilt was upon the land, and out of the abysses, between the stars, swept chill currents that made men shiver in dark and lonely places. There was a demonic alteration in the sequence of the seasons. The autumn heat lingered fearsomely, and everyone felt that the world and perhaps the universe had passed from the control of known gods or forces to that of gods or forces which were unknown. And it was then that Nyarlathotep came out of Egypt. Who he was, none could tell, but he was of the old native blood and looked like a pharaoh. The fellaheen knelt when they saw him, yet could not say why. He said he had risen up out of the blackness of 27 centuries, and that he had heard messengers from places not on this planet. Into the lands of civilization came Nyarlathotep, swarthy, slender, and sinister, always buying strange instruments of glass and metal, and combining them into instruments yet stranger. He spoke much of the sciences, of electricity and psychology, and gave exhibitions of power which sent his spectators away speechless, yet which swelled his fame to exceeding magnitude. Men advised one another to see Nyarlathotep, and shuddered. And where Nyarlathotep went, rest vanished. For the small hours were rent with the screams of nightmare. Never before had the screams of nightmare been such a public problem. Now the wise men almost wished they could forbid sleep in the small hours, that the shrieks of cities might less horribly disturb the pale, pitying moon as it glimmered on green waters, gliding under bridges, and old steeples crumbling against a sickly sky. I remember when Nyarlathotep came to my city. The great, the old, the terrible city of unnumbered crimes. My friend had told me of him, and of the impelling fascination and allurement of his revelations, and I burned with eagerness to explore his uttermost mysteries. My friends said they were horrible and impressive beyond my most fevered imaginings, that what was thrown on a screen in the darkened room prophesied things none but Nyarlathotep dared prophesy, and that in the sputter of his sparks there was taken from men that which had never been taken before, yet which shewed only in their eyes. And I heard it hinted abroad that those who knew Nyarlathotep looked on sights which others saw not. It was in the hot autumn that I went through the night with the restless crowds to see Nyarlathotep, through the stifling night and up the endless stairs into the choking room, and shadowed on a screen I saw hooded forms amidst ruins and yellow, evil faces peering from behind fallen monuments, and I saw the world battling against blackness, against the waves of destruction from ultimate space, whirling, churning, struggling around the dimming, cooling sun. Then the sparks played amazingly around the heads of the spectators, and hair stood up on end, whilst shadows, more grotesque than I can tell, came out and squatted on the heads. And when I, who was colder and more scientific than the rest, mumbled a trembling protest about imposture and static electricity, Nyarlathotep drave us all out, down the dizzy stairs, into the damp, hot, deserted midnight streets. I screamed aloud that I was not afraid, that I never could be afraid, and others screamed with me for solace. We swear to one another that the city was exactly the same and still alive. And when the electric lights began to fade, we cursed the company over and over again and laughed at the queer faces we made. I believe we felt something coming down from the greenish moon, for when we began to depend on its light, we drifted into curious, involuntary formations and seemed to know our destinations, though we dared not think of them. Once, we looked at the pavement and found the blocks loose and displaced by grass, with scarce a line of rusted metal to show where the tramways had run. And again we saw a tramcar, lone, windowless, dilapidated, and almost on its side. When we gazed around the horizon, we could not find the third tower by the river, and noticed that the silhouette of the second tower was ragged at the top. and then we split up into narrow columns, each of which seemed drawn in a different direction. One disappeared in a narrow alley to the left, leaving only the echo of a shocking moan. Another filed down a weed-choked subway entrance, howling with a laughter that was mad. My own column was sucked toward the open country, and presently felt a chill which was not of the hot autumn, for as we stalked out on the dark moor, we beheld around us the hellish moon glitter of evil snows, trackless, inexplicable snows, swept asunder in one direction only, where lay a gulf, all the blacker for its glittering walls. The column seemed very thin indeed as it plodded dreamily into the gulf. I lingered behind, for the black rift in the green-litten snow was frightful, and I thought I had heard the reverberations of a disquieting wail as my companions vanished. But my power to linger was slight, as if beckoned by those who had gone before. I half floated between the titanic snowdrifts, quivering and afraid, into the sightless vortex of the unimaginable. Screamingly sentient, dumbly delirious, only the gods that were can tell. A sickened, sensitive shadow writhing in hands that are not hands, and whirled blindly past ghastly midnights of rotting creation, corpses of dead worlds with sores that were cities, charnel winds that brush the pallid stars and make them flicker low. Beyond the world's vague ghosts of monstrous things, half-seen columns of unsanctified temples that rest on nameless rocks and reach up to dizzy vacua above the spheres of light and darkness. And through this revolting graveyard of the universe, the muffled, maddening beating of drums and thin, monotonous whine of blasphemous flutes from inconceivable, unlighted chambers beyond time, the detestable pounding and piping whereunto dance slowly, awkwardly, and absurdly the gigantic, tenebrous, ultimate gods, the blind, voiceless, mindless gargoyles, whose soul is Nyarlathotep. That's one of my favourite Lovecraft stories. What I love about Lovecraft, apart from the obvious kind of gothic language, inconceivable unlighted chambers, revolting graveyard of the universe, fantastic words just to feel on the tongue, but more than that, it's the out of sight, it's that at the edge of your eyes, that if you stare at it, you would go mad. And the reports we get from his characters and the tales that he writes are those who haven't quite seen, or those who have seen and can't quite say. There's bad stuff out there. So, Cast Macabre is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. I'm going to play you out with a song from a friend of mine called Dave the Bard, that's D-A-M-H, which is the Celtic word for stag, if you're interested. And this is a song from his album Spirit of Albion, which has got a thread of British folklore running through it. You can find his music at paganmusic.co.uk, and this song is about the Egyptian myth of the dying and rising god. ISIS Unveiled.
Game, create the time with every move and line. Jackal guard against the moon, and the game will be over soon. Can you hear the earth sighing as he turns towards the sky? The time of Ra is ending, and the sun begins to die. Can you feel it changing? Can you see her in the night? Can you feel it changing? Sky and earth, they are as one. Conceived daughter and son, sister, lover, goddess, queen, mother to every living being. Your light creates a shadow as you show your face unveiled. Your brother said betrays you, there's a coffin on the Nile. Can you feel it changing? Can you see her in the night? Can you feel it changing? Fourteen pieces to the wind, to all parts of the land. Scattered widely she will find, but form a lover from her hands. The sky, her tears of gladness, fall to the fertile ground. And set lost in his madness, to the desert land.